has me here giving you the inside scoop from Washington, D.C. is precisely because I have contacts inside the Capitol. Capitol Dome is not far from where I am right now. And I talked to a number of our friends in the Democratic Party on the Hill over the last few days. And yes, they are our friends. Let me be clear on that. We may disagree at times on strategy, but don't mistake disagreement over strategy with disagreement over heart. They are pained as well. And I should say, as I said, I believe all last week, that the first draft of the bills passed by the Democratic Congress are generally pretty damn good. Whether it be the energy bill or the alternative minimum tax fix or the spending priorities or deciding, as I believe, that we should fight the war in Afghanistan but give up on Iraq, a war we never should have fought in the first place. Their priorities pretty much match my own. I might disagree on a few things. I'm not huge on farm subsidies or earmarks, for that matter. But generally, I'd have to say the Democratic Congress, at first blush, at first draft, does about 80 to maybe 90% of what I'd want them to do. The problem was never in the first draft. The House passes the first draft. The Senate, if it can struggle through and get 60 votes, through the Republicans who filibuster every single Democratic bill, it'd be vetoed by the president. And oftentimes it'd be passed by the House, and they can't get the 60 votes they need in the Senate after all. There are only 49 Democrats in the Senate. There is our good friend, the socialist senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders. So he's effectively a Democrat. That's 50. And then there's Joe Lieberman, who just yesterday endorsed John McCain for president. We'll call him a Republican or a Demblican. I'm not going to call him a Republican yet. He still caucuses with the Democratic Party. Look, Harry Reid wouldn't have a job if it weren't for Joe Lieberman. So I can't completely write him out of the party. But clearly he is not a Democrat. He is, at best, tenuously on our side. And through those 50 and a half, or 50 and a quarter, or whatever you call Lieberman, 15 and eighth votes, through that tiniest of majorities, the Democrats are trying to go through the Senate. So I talk at length with my friends on the Hill, with our friends on the Hill, because I wanted to convey to you today why congressional Democrats cave, which is the title of today's show. Why do congressional Democrats cave? I did a show yesterday, which I hope you had a chance to hear, called Politics in the Red Zone, What Democrats Can Learn from Football. And my guest at the time, Ann Cook, argued that the Democrats have to act more like regular guys. They need more blue-collar values. I'm not sure I agree with everything she had to say. For one thing, I think that her ideas, which is really to appeal more to the straight white Christian male aspect of the party, I think does a real disservice to women and to African Americans and to gay people and to Latinos and to the whole breadth of the Democratic Party. Not to say that straight white Christian men don't have a major role to play in our party. I don't know whether to include Bob Kincaid in that or not. I guess he was raised Christian, but he's not any longer. But there are still some straight white Christian men. I'm not knocking them. But I think that the party has to be open to everyone. So, back to our original question. Why is it that congressional Democrats are caving? And I think to understand it, you just got to understand how Congress works. Again, I ain't justifying. I was plenty angry at them last week. But having had the time to sit back, to follow what's going on, I thought I would explain to you what people are telling me. Because they're certainly not telling the voters very clearly, out loud, what they're telling me in private. And that is a problem too, in my view. And it's a problem that may have to do with the Democratic Party and may have even more to do with the media in this country. So that's the focus of this hour. And I promise I will get to you to why congressional Democrats cave. That's the focus of the hour. We'll get there. But first, let's just go over where we are today, this hour, this moment. Today, the House of Representatives has passed a huge omnibus spending bill that funds every single department of government with the exception of the Defense Department. And that was done by a decent margin, about 250 to 150 something. The House then voted by a very close margin, 206 to 201, to include $31 billion in fighting in Afghanistan. And zero, that's big goose egg, that's $1 billion minus $1 billion, zero money for the war in Iraq. So far, not so bad. The domestic spending bill, they tried to spend $22 billion more than Bush asked for, cut it down to $11 billion. There was some concern that they would cut that down to zero again, but they didn't. They kept the $11 billion in. They had to relabel it emergency and silly stuff like that, but they kept it in. And largely they got Republicans on board through the way Republicans always get Republicans on board with massive amounts of earmarks, including 8,983 earmarks. And, you know, earmarks are earmarks. Some are really ridiculous. Some make sense. All of them are members of Congress bringing home to their district a little bit of federal pork. Republicans love earmarks, and indeed, past Republican Congresses had much, much more in earmarks. There's a few little things in it that are interesting, that are good. A little bit stopping of some logging on national forest land. The Democrats took away from the AIDS relief efforts overseas the stuff that was abstinence only, as if the United States of America was going to go to Africa and convince Africans to stop having sex in order to stop AIDS, rather than teaching them instead safe sex, which also prevents AIDS, and heck, you get to have sex too. Somehow I just don't see a huge amount, millions of people all across the globe listening to the United States when they're lectured not to have sex. So that was a good provision. Another provision allows the D.C. the autonomy that any state would have, but D.C. to have its right to have needle exchanges for intravenous drug users. Whatever you think of intravenous drug use, clearly, I hope you don't support the death penalty for it, which is what happens when they use the same needles and they get AIDS. There's some bad stuff in it, too. There's more corporate welfare. Republicans love that. This time for liquid coal and nuclear projects, some loan guarantees they couldn't get bank financing for. And not everything has been done well on the sexual rights ideas. For example, we know that the Bush administration had prevented international family planning organizations that have abortions from getting federal aid, and that part wasn't changed. That part will still continue. But all in all, the domestic part of the bill isn't the worst thing in the world. Those kinds of compromises, I understand, are necessary. They wouldn't be necessary with a Democratic president, but they're necessary with a Republican filibuster. The problem is not what the Democrats passed yesterday. The problem is what everyone expects to happen today, tomorrow, Thursday. Let me predict the future. It ain't that hard to do. The bill goes to the Senate. Then the Senate has a majority with its Democrats and maybe a renegade Republican or two, probably has a majority to pass it. But the Republicans will filibuster. It won't go through the Senate. And then the Republicans will propose a compromise. Same bill, but, oh, yes, $70 billion more in Iraq war aid please. The Democrats, unlike the Republicans, will not filibuster that. Oh, no, no, no. No, that will be allowed by a majority vote. It will pass. And then it will come back to the House. At which point, Nancy Pelosi will grit her teeth, allow the bill to go to the floor, where she and 80% of Democrats will vote against it. The Republicans, along with a few Democrats, will pass the bill, much as they did when the Republicans were in the majority. The Iraq war will get its aid. Liberal Democrats will scream, and we'll all go home for the holidays. That's my prediction. It's not a pretty one. It's what I was railing about last week. But why is it going to happen? The explanation when we come back. If you want to call in and ask questions about this, please do. I'd love to have a colloquy with you. Toll-free number 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Jesus don't love me. This I know. The Evangelicals told me so. Strictly Confidential, 9 p.m. Eastern.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Time after time after time again, throughout this calendar year 2007 that's drawing to a close, the Democrats start with pretty good legislation, actually. Passes the House of Representatives, some decent bills to help out people, to make this country a better place, to cut back on some of the excesses of the Bush administration. And the Republicans filibuster, Bush vetoes, the Democrats cave. Time after time after time again. And the question is why? Conspiracy theorists will suggest that maybe the Democrats aren't on our side after all. They're just caving in. I can see that Jersey in the chat room, not meaning to pick on you, but I think the view he expressed is one that is actually commonly thought among those of us who generally support the Democratic Party. The corporations have bought them off. They just don't care what their constituents think. It's all about promoting the corporations. I actually don't think that's the case. I think the reason why congressional Democrats are caving, and a lot of this has to do with my talks with several of them, and I spent a lot of time on the phone today and yesterday and Friday talking with Democrats on the Hill. Let me suggest to you that the truth is a little bit plainer, a little bit scarier in some ways. It all has to do with the inside scoop on how our government works. To get a law passed through Congress, this is, you know, where the social studies textbooks are partly right. To get a law through Congress, you have to have the approval of the House of Representatives and the Senate and the President. Now, it's true if the President vetoes it and you have two-thirds vote in both houses, you can override the veto. But barring some time in the 30s when FDR was in power, it's hard to think of a time in American government when one party had two-thirds of either house. Certainly, it's never happened in my lifetime. So you need to control all three. The Democrats have some control over the House, barely have control of the Senate, and obviously don't have control over the Cheney Rove puppet we call George Bush Jr. So what that means is, I want you to think about any time you have a process that requires three fundamental ingredients. Any time one of those ingredients is missing, you can't achieve anything. What that means is, and the way our system is set up, and I'm not even sure that it's a bad way in general for a constitutional system of government to be set up. It's not true in a parliamentary system. But the way our constitutional system is set up, it's easier to do nothing than it is to do something. It requires the agreement of all three to do something. Now, in Great Britain, where the House of Lords is meaningless, basically you elect your party, they control the House of Commons, the Prime Minister is of the leading party, and boom, you could have massive changes very quickly. That's true in a parliamentary system, and we can argue over whether that's a better system or not. That's not our system. Our system of government requires all three, Senate, House, and President, to agree. And not only that, but it requires, given this crazy filibuster rule, and we can talk about where it came from. I've done that before in the past. But given the filibuster rules of the Senate, you need 60 senators, along with a majority of the House and the President, to really get something done. That's some tough numbers. So it's always easier to do nothing than to do something. I have never argued, and no one could argue, no one would be right to argue, that the Democrats can pass a bill just because they want it passed. Anyone will tell you that's just not true. They have a majority in the House, they don't have 60 votes in the Senate, but even if they did, they don't have a president. So the Democrats, let's be fair, cannot pass any bill they want. They just can't do that. At least not until we have an election in 2008, elect a Democratic president, and frankly add a number of Democratic senators to the list. And I think we can. I think we can add almost five, which will put our numbers at 56, very, very tantalizing close to that 60 number. And things can really change come January 09. But for now, we can't do that. The one thing the Democrats have power to do, and it's the thing I was harping on all last week, is they do have the power to do nothing. Both parties have the power to do nothing. It's the reason why I argued way back when the Republicans were in the majority, and they had the House and the Senate and the President, that we needed to filibuster those Supreme Court nominees. It was easy to do nothing, just filibuster them. The Democrats didn't, because they thought, well, when we have a president, we don't want the Republicans to filibuster our nominees, blah, 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 blah. But the point is, it's easy to do nothing. Now, if you do nothing, the government shuts down. The government doesn't get funded. The Democrats can do nothing. All the House has to do is say, sorry, Mr. President, you can veto all the bills you like. We will never give you a bill. Nancy Pelosi could say, I will never allow on the floor another bill that gives another penny to Iraq. She could say that. That's what I was arguing she should do last week. And the president can say, I will never, ever sign a bill that doesn't provide funding for Iraq. The old philosophical conundrum, what do you do when an irresistible force meets an immovable post? What do you do when an irresistible force meets an immovable post? And the answer is that both cannot exist. That's the conundrum. That's the answer. You cannot have an irresistible force and an immovable post in the same universe. It just doesn't happen. One of them has, either the force isn't irresistible or the post is not immovable. When the president can insist until kingdom come, until January 20th, 2009, frankly, is when our kingdom comes, that he's never going to sign a bill that doesn't include money for Iraq. He could do that. Nancy Pelosi could say she's never going to allow a bill to come to the floor that includes money for Iraq. She can do that. And what happens when that happens? Stalemate. Stalemate. It's not just a question of no funding for Iraq, because the president is tying it all together. He was saying he wouldn't sign any bill. He wouldn't sign any spending bill whatsoever unless it included money for Iraq. No money for parks. No money for embassies. No money for, you know, job services. No money for Katrina victims. No money for veterans. No money. No federal money. That's it. And indeed, that happened. In 1995, 1996, many of us remember, Bill Clinton was in charge of the White House, the Republicans were in charge of Congress, and they both played this game of chicken. That's what I call it. You know what the game of chicken is, don't you? The game of chicken is played like this. I'm in one car, and I drive as fast as I can toward another car. And somebody in the other car drives as fast as he can. I don't say he or she, because women aren't stupid enough to play this game. But he drives as fast as he can toward me. Now, we both know what happens if neither of us swerves. If neither of us swerves, the cars hit each other and we both die. So the question is, who swerves first? They're the chicken. The person who doesn't swerve is the winner. So if you have determined that you're willing to die, and you hope that your opponent is not willing to die, he swerves, you win. Yay! You've won the game of chicken. The fight between Congress and the president is a constitutional game of chicken. Bush has said he won't back down. Let's say the Democrats took my hard medicine. Let's say they did what I told them to do last week. Let's say they said, sorry, Bush, we're not playing. The game of chicken commences. The government is shut down. Now, it wouldn't affect things like Social Security, to be fair. Social Security, Medicare, those are on continuing resolutions. That you have to actually stop. That's why the Republicans, when they stupidly say, the money's going to run out for Social Security, that's ridiculous. Social Security is automatic. It's paid by law unless you change the law. But it would affect veterans' benefits. It would affect Katrina victims. I think it may affect student loans. I'll have to check that, but I'm pretty sure it does affect student loans. I know it affects research to cure diseases. All of that would stop. And the question is, if the government shuts down, what would be the result? Who would the American people blame? Who would be harmed? And when you have a party like the Republicans, who don't want government to help the ordinary citizens at all, who believe that if a flood comes, the people should just drown, who would be most harmed? The Democrats argued to me that when we shut down the government, number one, more of our people, the people who need the government, the people, the poorest and the weakest among us, would suffer, they said. And number two, they think the Democrats would be to blame. Why is that? What's their reasoning? Why won't they do my idea, play chicken? I'll tell you more after the break. Toll-free numbers, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Congratulations to Chris Dodd and Russ Feingold. They stood up to Bush, and they stood up to Harry Reid. On Monday, on the Senate floor, Harry Reid, ostensibly the majority leader of the Democrats, tried to do Bush's business by introducing a FISA bill that would have let the NSA spy on us without warrants and would have immunized the telecom companies from liability for illegally violating our privacy. Dodd vowed to filibuster the bill, and he and Feingold took to the Senate floor to thunder against this unconstitutional legislation. It's amazing that Bush wanted to go to the mat for the telecom companies. That's got nothing to do with keeping America safe from terrorism and everything to do with Bush coddling his corporate cronies and the criminals in the suites. Even more amazing, though, is that Reid was prepared to go along with this. Only the principled stand by Dodd and by Feingold and a handful of others forced Reid to pull the bill off the floor. Harry Reid has forfeited his right to be majority leader. He's not a leader. He's a follower. He doesn't stand up to Bush. He caves to Bush repeatedly, whether on the surge or on this. The Democrats need a majority leader who's not weak-kneed. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. nothing to look at, keep moving, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying to make me stay, you know I've got to be moving on.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Last week, I excoriated the Democrats. I know a lot of you enjoyed hearing me speak from the heart, and I was speaking from the heart. Well, today, I'm speaking from the brain. Let me tell you why your Democrat representatives are caving in to Bush. I don't think it's the right strategy. I still don't think it's the right strategy, but you should understand what they're thinking. And I kind of wish they would say it in public, honestly, rather than whispering it to me and letting me tell you on the air. So here's the deal. The constitutional system as it's set up allows, when you have divided government, as we do now, Democrats in charge of Congress and Republicans in charge of the presidency, when you have divided government, either party can do nothing. But in order to do something, the parties have to agree. So, the Republicans are saying, we're not going to negotiate. We're going to filibuster everything. We are going to insist on continuing this war in Iraq. The president will not sign anything unless it includes that money. The Republicans can insist on nothing. The Democrats can insist on nothing. Pelosi can say, sorry, no bill. We're all going home now. Adjourned. And then the government shuts down. And the game of chicken begins. Now, in 1995, 1996, there was this presidential game of chicken between the president and Congress. And virtually all observers believe that Bill Clinton won that battle. His approval rating soared. Republican Congress's approval ratings went in the toilet. And he won a nice little massive re-election in 1996. Polls supported what he did. Now, there are two lessons to be learned from the 1996 shutdown of the government, and they are in diametrically opposed places. One lesson to be learned, the lesson I take from the government shutdown of 1996, is that when the Democrats and the Republicans reach an impasse, and America is forced to choose between Democratic priorities, one of Bill Clinton's priorities at that time was the Family Medical Leave Act, the thing that says that if your mother gets sick or your child gets sick or you have a baby, you should be allowed to leave your job, take care of your family, and then come back without losing your job. Democratic family values, as opposed to, say, Republican family values, which is to prosecute sex and gay people and force women to have lots of children at age 13. Democratic family values versus Republican family values. And I would argue in 1996, the country supported Democratic values. And that's why Bill Clinton won. But I have to tell you, my friends in Congress, my Democratic friends in Congress, take the opposite lesson from 1996. They say the lesson of 1996 is that when the president fights Congress and the government is shut down, the president wins those battles. The president has a bully pulpit. The president can come on TV anytime he damn well pleases and give a speech to the American people. Pelosi and Harry Reid, they don't have the power to do that. What I was told several times, in fact, when I mentioned the 96 shutdown, is that when that happens, the president wins. I said, no, when that happens, the Democrat wins. Well, it's hard to know who's right unless we play chicken again. Right? We can't know who would win. We do know what would happen. We know that if that happened, Bush would demagogue the Democrats in the worst possible way. the Democrats would try to attack him back, what would the American people think? Now, let's just take this back to Iraq. The Democrats have time and time again said, we will provide the money that is needed in Iraq, and there is still some money needed, in order to bring the troops home. They can't just all turn around and run. You got to get tanks out. I mean, we got so much infrastructure there now and barracks and all that even the new Democratic president that hopefully will be inaugurated in January 20th, 2009, he or she will not be able to get it all done quickly. It'll probably take at least a year just because we're so there now. And that will take some money. The Democrats have provided that money for withdrawal. Bush has vetoed the bill. So now, it comes January, it comes February. Let's say the Democrats played chicken, did what I suggested, what I keep suggesting, what I call my elected representatives and suggest. Say no more funding, negotiate with us, or no deal. And now the money stops coming. Now, true, the president could play around with Pentagon funds and frankly keep it a lot longer than February, probably keep it several more months. But eventually, the money starts running out. Bush could use what funds are left to bring the troops out of Iraq. Some would argue that would be the responsible thing to do. But he's already let it known that he's not going to do that. The troops will stay. He has that constitutional right as commander-in-chief. They just won't have body armor. They just won't have food. Thousands of Americans, our best men and women, fighting young people dedicated to serving their country, who did not choose to go to Iraq, will be there without food, I guess. The president will let them starve. And as they're dying, he will blame Congress. That is who dies in the game of chicken. Not the president. Not the Democrats. It's the troops. The president could follow the Democrats and bring them home, but he won't. So that's the real question in the game of chicken. Who is heartless enough or smart enough, depending on your perspective, strategic enough, to let American troops starve and die? And the Democrats say, we're not willing to do that. But what they haven't conveyed to the American people is that Bush is willing to do that. That Bush would allow thousands of hard-working young Americans who are risking their lives for their country, many joined after September 11th, after this country was attacked, to fight in Afghanistan, not to fight in Iraq. He would have their blood on his hands rather than back down. That is probably true. The Democrats believe it's true. That's why they're caving. But why the heck aren't they saying so? If the Democrats are going to cave, they could do so and make clear why. President Bush made it clear, Nancy Pelosi could say, that he was willing to let troops starve in Iraq and die rather than bring them home if we cut off funding. The president was willing to murder thousands of Americans. I wasn't willing to go that far. And when he put their lives in my hand, I had to make sure they stayed alive, at least until he get a president who cared about their safety. How's that for a speech, Nancy Pelosi? You'd still cave, but you'd do so in a way that made it very clear to Americans why you're caving. This is what they're whispering to me, my friends. In the event of a government shutdown, what the Democrats are telling me is that who gets hurt the most when the government is shut down? The poorest, the weakest among us, that Republicans don't give a damn about government. They don't care who's harmed. They don't care who dies. They have no sympathy for the troops. They certainly have no sympathy for homeless people or for people trying to get student loans or for people who need cures for all kinds of health problems. They don't believe government should help those people at all. Ayn Rand, right? You know who Ayn Rand is? The author of Atlas Shrugged? Who proclaimed the virtues of selfishness? All for me and none for you. That's the Republican world. And in that battle of government shutdown, they say, the Democrats in Congress say, we can't win because our people get hurt. But you know what? I hear it. I hear what they're saying. I understand what they're saying. In that battle, the weakest get hurt, veterans get hurt, and fundamentally, we have no control over the media. That's why it matters when Kevin Martin, the head of the FCC, is allowing media consolidation. Because it would be played, people would die, and in 96 they blamed Congress, and they would blame Congress again. That's what they're saying. But you know what? I don't know. I admit it. I don't know. Nobody knows how it would play out. They say they're veterans. They know Democrats would be blamed. Everyone would hate the Democrats. I'm not so sure. Bill Clinton stood firm. One of the reasons why I liked Bill Clinton as president, and he was not perfect by any means, was that he knew how to play rough when he had to. He knew how to play dirty when he had to. Frankly, that may be a reason why I might vote for Hillary Clinton, ironically. Precisely maybe because she's not as idealistic as a Barack Obama or a John Edwards, and she can play dirty when she needs to. I think I like that. You got to play rough in Washington. I don't know. I still haven't decided. My heart still wants to vote for Obama or Edwards. But I understand the need to play dirty. Bill Clinton played it rough. He allowed the government to shut down. He allowed weak people to get hurt by that government shutdown. He allowed it to happen. And at the end of the day, in the long run, he won the battle that let him win the war. And for the next 4 years, Bill Clinton gave us massive surpluses, the Family Medical Leave Act, a number of pieces of legislation that were very good for America. Maybe we do have to suffer a little in order to make for a better America. It's a question of strategy, and it's the same strategy I argued last week. If you let the government shut down, we will see whose side the American people are on. I don't think the Democrats want to take that risk. And part of the reason they don't is because after one more year of suffering, 2009 may be a wonderful year. If the Democrats take the risk, if they shut down the government, there's a possible dynamic. And I don't know which way it'll go. Will it go my way? Will the American people rally behind the Democrats? Or will it go the way the Democrats fear? What with the consolidation of the press, of the media, which is even more consolidated now than it was 11 years ago, with the Rush Limbaughs and the talk radio controlled by the right, will everyone blame the Democrats? Will that mean that we have a Republican victory in a landslide, Republican president, Republican Congress? That kind of dramatic thing could happen if the government is shut down. It could go the other way. There could be a massive Democratic victory. It's rolling the dice, which I admit, that's what I said, roll it. But what the Democrats in Congress are basically telling me is, look, if we don't roll the dice, if we play it, dare I say, safe, give Bush a little of what he wants, the dynamics going into 2008 are pretty good for us. It looks like we can win 4 to 5 Senate seats. It looks like we can win more in the House. It looks like we can get a Democratic president. And then with all three under our control, finally, we can do these things that the American people want us to do. I don't know who's right. I don't know whether I'm right. I don't know whether they're right. But I thought it important that you at least understand where they're coming from. It's not as fun as railing on them as I did last week, speaking from the heart. But speaking from the mind, you should at least know. I should at least give you the inside scoop on what they're telling me. There are some benefits, by the way, to our constitutional system, which values nothing over something. One of those benefits is found in the telecom law. You know, of course, that George Bush wants to spy on us. He wants to do so without court supervision. And the Democrats caved about 5 months ago because they had very little time before the old law expired. The courts had declared that he can't do that under the Constitution. And so they passed a quick fix law to give him 6 months. Well, that's coming up for renewal in February. And the Republicans wanted to add something else. They wanted to add telecom immunity. In other words, they wanted to say that if the President of the United States asks a phone company to violate the Constitution, and it violates the Constitution at the President's request, no harm, no foul. As long as the President is going and infringing on your civil liberties, not a big deal. Sure, we don't allow an ordinary police officer to search you with a warrant, but the president wants to, no problem. Sure, we don't normally throw people in jail without a trial, without evidence, without charges, in secret prisons and torture them, but if the president wants to do it, fine. So the argument goes, if the telecom companies break the law and the president asks them to, well, you know, they should go ahead and break the law. You may recall when the president had his big spy on us plan, Quest, to their credit, refused to go along and said, hey, we're going to follow the Constitution. Sorry, Mr. President. Everybody else caved. AT&T, Verizon, probably your cable company or your phone company. Mine certainly did. The ones that 250 million Americans use caved, and now the government has all that information. Well, Republicans want to make sure that never happens again. And so they want this immunity for telecommunications companies. They can break the law with impunity as long as the president asks them to. And it looked like it was going to happen, that that bill was going to pass. But our constitutional system, and this time it's a good thing, it's easier to do nothing than to do something. The hero, of course, is presidential candidate Senator Chris Dodd, Democrat of Connecticut, who put a hold on the bill. It looked like Harry Reid, was going to cave in once again, but then Dodd and his allies, a number of Democratic allies, threw a dozen amendments in there, all kinds of guerrilla tactics, did everything they could, and as usual, it's easier to stop something than to start something. Harry Reid has had to back down. And now, this law that allows the president to go around the foreign intelligence surveillance courts, now it expires 2 weeks after Congress reconvenes in mid-January. Now, here's the kicker. This is the part that made me laugh. The Democrats will likely pass a bill that includes the law that makes it continue, but does not provide telecom immunity. The president has said, get this, that unless there's telecom immunity, he will veto the bill. That made me laugh. Some threat. Because if he doesn't sign the bill, in 2 weeks, the law ends. We go back to the old law. Go back to using the courts. Go back to the constitutional way. See, in this case, if nothing is done, the Democrats win. The American people win. The Constitution wins. In this case, when the president says, I'm going to veto the bill, nothing is better than something. And we'll get rid of the whole law that he wants. Fine, so the president won't be able to wiretap us. No skin off my teeth. That's why the thing is really funny. Here, you have a case where nothing wins. So I just wanted to explain the constitutional system, explain how it works. If you want to call in, by the way, I'd love to hear from you. It's 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you have any questions about what I just said. But understand that the strategy that I proposed last week, And I still support it. I want you to think I'm backing down from it. I still support it, but sometimes I don't know whether it's my heart or my brain that supports it. That strategy is a high-risk strategy. And the Democrats just don't have enough media support, really, to succeed in that strategy, they think. They think in the event of a constitutional showdown with Bush, the American people clearly, look, the American people would clearly be mad at everybody. If there were that showdown and that slowdown, the American people would be mad at Bush, and they'd be mad at Congress too. Who would they be more mad at? I just don't know. Ask your independent friends. I think we could win that battle. But the Democrats are basically saying, one more year of suffering, the light's at the end of the tunnel, let's elect a huge majority in Congress, and then we can finally do what you elected us to do. It's no fun apologizing for these people. It's much more fun railing on these people. But I get it. I get it. I get their argument, and I wanted to convey it to you. At least I understand it. It's how our system works. So, let me tell you what's coming up over the next few days. Right here on the Inside Scoop. Again, there's still some time to call in if you want to comment on what I've just said today, or you can always comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. Tomorrow is the week in review. I will let you know what the Democrats do. I expect they will, having passed this bill, it will go to the Senate, the Republicans will filibuster, and then they'll throw in the $70 billion for Iraq. Now, it's possible that the whole thing won't pass, and enough Republicans, there are some Republicans that care about spending, not many, but a few, and that they'll combine with the Democrats, and they won't pass the bill without Iraq. Because even if Pelosi brings it to the floor, they still need a majority. And we can actually test the nothing. You know, the money doesn't run out over Christmas. It takes a couple months to run out. Couldn't we test the theory, Democrats? I know you say it's dangerous. So here I am arguing my side now instead of their side. I know you say it's dangerous, but couldn't we test it for a little while? Let's see who the polls show is at fault. Couldn't Nancy Pelosi try to get on national television? And if she's denied, at least she tries. There's still some hope this bill can fail. And I hope you'll call your representative, whether it be a Democrat or Republican, and say, don't vote for any bill as long as there's money in Iraq. But tomorrow's the week in review. We'll go over exactly what's going on, all the news of the week, and hopefully some of you will call in and tell me what's on your mind on this issue or anything else. And then Thursday is going to be a very interesting show, a very dangerous show, I think. I'm going to have another evangelical on, a New Testament expert, a professor of New Testament studies at the Dallas Theological Seminary, an editor for Christianity Today, the past president of the Evangelical Theological Society, and the author of a book called Dethroning Jesus Concepts, Popular Culture's Quest to Unseat the Biblical Christ. This guy is the expert in the world on why Jesus is the Son of God. That's what he thinks. He's going to come on my show, and I'm going to ask him some tough questions, because I'm not afraid to approach anyone on any issue. Now, it's a scary issue if you are easily offended by religious discussions. If you don't want someone challenging your faith, don't listen Thursday, because we're going to have quite a discussion. Hopefully respectful. I fully intend to be respectful. I hope he will be respectful. But the question for Thursday is, was Jesus God? And it's one that he raised, just to be fair. Daryl Bach is his name. He sent basically an email around saying, I'll take all comers. I want to discuss this question. And I'm leery of it. Not because I don't think I'm right, but because I don't want to offend people. So if you're easily offended, don't listen Thursday. Then Sunday, for those of you who check out the Inside Scoop on Sundays at 6:30, we're having a holiday show. We're going to go behind the scenes, play some clips from some of my favorite shows, and then I'm off for a couple weeks. I do want to wish everyone very happy holidays, a Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, just whatever it is. Spend time with your family and Happy New Year. We still got some more time this week, and never hesitate to let me know your thoughts Just go to the web at RadioInsideScoop.com. Let me know what you think. But for now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
We got the crabs. Yeah, he said it. I'm just quoting. And then you see that. Could George Bush write a single sentence in the paragraphs that I just read to you? No. Not a prayer. Not a chance. That old saw about infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Let's try this again. Mercy sakes. That was certainly weird last night, wasn't it? I promise you, I didn't just get disgusted and walk away. I'm too big a pro to do something like that. No. Our internet service just was burpy, and it pretty much